Welcome to the 2019 Year in Review podcast here on the MTOM. I'm Paul Yeager, joined by my colleagues. Well, our boss, David Miller, is here.
Hello.
John Torpy and Peter Tubbs. Guys, before we get going here, this is the second Year in Review. We did one last week on trade, and that was heavy trade. And these are a little shorter just to kind of help you catch up. But I do have a little bit of note, and I'm really sad nobody's noticed what we've done in this room. There's been another addition done to the room. Does anybody know what it is?
In the corner?
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't see that down there. Yes.
In the corner, I found the market-to-market pig that was decorated and won a prize, if not a blue ribbon, at the Iowa State Fair.
It won a prize. I don't think we got a blue ribbon.
Honorable mention.
Maybe we got an honorable mention. So we got a trophy. Everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah.
So now we have one more token, and it's a little dusty, so I'm going to have to dust it off, but
well, it's been in the scene shop.
So is this the episode where we get into the potato salad?
Yeah.
There are some people. Oh, by the way, if Jeff Ryan is listening, Lefse's good. I've conquered that task.
Yeah.
In our email exchange yesterday, it was I've now arrived at a certain level in his world. So
So that would be a past edition. Go back to our Thanksgiving food episode, which either I'm going to just replay and make us sound cringeworthy for years, or we have to continue to defend ourselves over time. Could be what we do.
Oh, you're doing well with that defense, by the way.
The cringeworthy part?
Yes.
Well, that's what we do. We talked in episode one a lot about trade, but in any other year, and Peter kind of alluded to it a little bit with the weather, as did John, Western Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, Missouri, the Missouri River itself was just an absolute mess, and the devastation of people gone, fields not planted for the entire year, and there's even doubt that they're going to be able to be planted in 2020. John, when you cross the Missouri there into Omaha, you don't fully get it at all. You have to go north or south of that point to see the damage. Some of the worst is to the south. But do you remember the Friday? I think I was talking to you about this here last week. We were looking at tweets that were the biggest tweet that I can find of 2019 was the one of the bridge, the retweet of the bridge that you're not sure what you're looking at, and all of a sudden this two parallel lines start moving from right to left, and it was an entire bridge being swept off of and down. A tiny little thing. I'm talking a major whoosh, there it goes. Weather was a big deal.
There are some areas that authorities say will never be replanted because of the damage done, what was in the water, how the water moved over the land. There are farms that will not be able to farm ever again. And you can look forward to our coverage of the spring flooding that will more than likely happen in 2020. We're going to take a long look at that and be ready to kind of examine what happens this year, because it's looking like it's going to be just as bad, if not worse. This late harvest, it's very, very wet. A lot of that moisture has not left the land, and you're getting that same pattern of those record snowfalls. Montana's got 18 feet of snow, and all that's going to go somewhere. So it's looking pretty dire for Western Iowa, Eastern Nebraska, and other parts along the Missouri River.
We set up this year's weather back in mid-March. We had a big amount of snow starting to melt and head downstream, and then all of a sudden it rained. The bomb cyclone was just, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, back on the 15th of 2019 was the show that we covered it. And then we went and continued to cover flooding. And then all of a sudden, late January, we had a prospective plannings issue. And so things were always moving. I mean, trade was a big story, Peter, but the weather didn't have, I think John Roach said last week, the biggest impact of weather, I think, is in June, when the crop was at its most vulnerable. It's pretty vulnerable, though, too, coming out of winter into spring this year.
Well, just how delayed everyone's planting was and how herky-jerky it was. You'd get 3 good days, and then you wouldn't turn a wheel for a month. I remember driving in the summer, and you would see neighboring fields. One was 6 weeks ahead of its neighbor just because it happened to get in during a window that then the next field
there
over
was like
didn't.
Yeah. One day in May that, yeah. that those guys got in and you knew which ones they were. Yeah, as I traveled too, I saw the same thing.
Yeah, and so then that rippled into the fall that there was corn early that you could get if it wasn't pouring rain. And then you might have to sit and wait for something to finish maturing. So it was this weird delayed echo sort of effect.
Yeah, I think the only saving grace was that late fall, you know, we had kind of a lingering warm season in fall that helped, you know, beans fill up and get those pods filled up. And I mean, that was the only nice thing I think weather did for farmers this year.
The only thing was it was warm weather that caused thunderstorms. Yeah. And we had the amount of rain and water. I mean, how many times have you seen it on the field or on the road, David? There's mud on it from somebody just – I've shown you picture after picture of producers trying to get out of a field. And the only tillage was done by the tractor.
Yeah, you couldn't move. Or the pictures that would show up on Twitter of somebody with some sort of four-wheel drive tractor stuck – being pulled by another four-wheel drive tractor, being pulled by some two-wheel drive thing that they could find so they could pull everything out of the big mud hole they were stuck in.
But then everything got stuck.
Well, there was one that was just like that. There was a lot of chains, a lot of log chains between everything. And it's like, I always worry about a log chain snapping in that point. But you know, people pulling each other out for that. And just nobody knowing. We went through, and we're still not going to be sure until next month, no, and we're not even sure if that's the right number, but nobody really knows how much we really grew. I mean, the prevent plant acres were higher than what would normally have happened with regular crop insurance. That is, the RMA says, is an average of like this would happen this way. Then the numbers of million acres that were paid on were higher. So nobody, it's like, where are the acres? What is the real number here? And with the trade war going on, that also is not allowing the price to come up a lot. I mean, having the agreement did bring the price up quite a lot week over week. And we mentioned that on the show this past week when John Roach was on. So that dates this particular podcast when we're recording. But it's one of those where we're looking out there and it's like, will we ever know? Will we ever know how much was really brought in for this year? I mean, how much is still out there in storage with people waiting?
I had a farmer who said USDA is just going to punt this down the road, and the only way that we're ever going to know real numbers is if we have a late planting, late crop in 2020. And even then, we still might not know. Otherwise, USDA hasn't had to be truthful for numbers in many farmers' eyes.
Yes.
But it is the only thing. It is the thing that does move the market.
It's the thing that moves the market. Even if you hate those numbers and you think that they're not telling you the truth for whatever reason, those are the numbers that move the market.
And it's always an estimate. I mean, they aren't weighing every wagon coming out of every field, so it's still just a finger in the air. Well, we think this many acres got planted. If we yielded this, then you get that. You know. So, yeah, you're right. It's the only number we have.
I'm curious to see if weather from 2019, the impact that has on 2020. With the amount of moisture that we've had, has it changed the fields? Has it changed the game for a lot of farmers? And they're changing their plan just solely based on weather.
Well, it's possible. And if you look at the weather story, I guess I should really couch a lot of this discussion. What we're talking about is the Corn Belt. Because if you look in the southeastern United States, they were in drought for much of the year, and now the West has started to develop a little bit of a drought again, whether it's in Utah, into New Mexico, Arizona, and a little bit of California. If I look at 52 weeks in 2019, I can really only count about five episodes where we did not talk about trade or the weather or this other story, and that is the renewable fuel standard. And are we in? Are we out? Are the exemptions in? Or are the exemptions out? So really, when we joke about three stories, John, it really is about RFS, and the story is not over yet.
No, not at all. Not by a long shot, because it's almost the same setup as the trade-China discussion, because you know, you have President Trump saying, hey, I'm with you, farmers. We're going to get your 15 billion gallons. USDA Secretary Senator Perdue $15 billion is $15 billion. And then the EPA comes in and says, no, it's not, because we're going to take care of all these refineries first with these small exemptions. And it's just wreaked havoc, but they keep just playing back and forth and back and forth, and it doesn't seem like this is ever going to get resolved. Sony produced an announcement last week. You know, 15 billion is 15 billion gallons, and then all the exemptions are going to come on top of that. The problem is, it's just like all the other stories. It's, we've heard this before, and it's when the check is in the bank, when it clears, then we'll really see that. And if you get that 15 billion, how does that help the farmers that are hurting? You know, we've got a lot of corn sitting around. Can we, is this 15 billion gallons going to help get rid of some of that?
But Peter, they said in the Oval Office, I heard the word of the president. I'm sticking by the word 15 billion gallons is 15 billion gallons. How many times have you heard that?
Oh, my. Once or twice. Yeah.
And that's the really the only thing right now the renewable fuels people are clinging to, is that was the word of the president.
Yeah.
Because the oil people are launching their own, hey, if we can't produce oil, there's a whole bunch of jobs that we're going to be out.
Yeah, that's always the classic defense of any industry is, hey, you can't, we have to keep doing what we're doing, otherwise X number of guys are going to get thrown out of work. And it's never the potential for new jobs as you move away from whatever the old thing is never as attractive as, I joke that we all love progress and we all hate change. And, you know, we love the new thing once we get to it. But, man, the fear of leaving the old is just, you know. I mean, internally, do you remember what it was like when we left the internal-only email system to the email system that could go both talk inside and outside the building? There were people who never left, who never went to the new thing. They just kept working on the old thing until they retired.
David is in the room.
Hey,
please don't talk about it.
No, it's just rude. Way more progressive than
that. But, you know, the RFS, when you get down to it, it's a federal law. You know, they kind of have to do it. And that was Senator Grassley's point. It's like, follow the law.
The letter law. And, David, I don't know how many times you've seen, you remember when the standard was put in. And the backlash that happened then.
Well, when it started way back, I remember years ago, 2005 and then in 2007 when they upgraded it. But when they put this thing in place, the oil companies complained in back channels that, well, if you do an E10, that takes away 10% of our business. And then there were the progressives on the other side that said, well, why don't you get involved in this? And they're like, no, oil is – this is what we do. We do oil. We do petroleum products. So you have both sides fighting. Over the years, I've seen like the Renewable Fuels Association in Iowa, the IRFA, have rallies where they say this is the whatever anniversary of tax breaks for oil companies. And then the oil companies countering saying we don't get tax breaks. That none of that happens, and this back and forth. And then over time, the federal mandates by the EPA to reduce the number of gallons you have to consume so you get more miles per gallon, essentially, in your car has turned the country from an importer to a net exporter of oil. So now we got all these forces fighting again for really thin slivers of a market. Is going to be interesting to see what happens here.
The fight wouldn't be so fierce if gasoline sales were going up every year. This is either the third or the fourth year in a row where gasoline sales in the United States have been flat. So we're collectively driving less and the fleet's efficiency gets slightly better every year. So demand is just not going anywhere. So if it was ticking up 1% every year or 2% every year, it'd be a lot easier to get petroleum and ethanol together and say, okay, we can do this. We can do this because we're all making some money. Petroleum is concerned that this is the beginning of a long-term slide in demand, and they have all these assets that they have spent a lot of money on and are leveraged on that they got to pay off.
And the same the same could be said about the dairy industry. Fewer and fewer people are drinking milk, right, which is part of their problem. Right. But back to oil, you would think traditional wisdom would tell you about all the unease that's been going on with OPEC and in that region where we get a lot of oil. That really should have sparked some interest in the market going higher. And it really hasn't, it hasn't historically.
Or it'll be a one-day story. Yeah, a refinery gets bombed and, it ticks up and then they come in the next morning whatever.
Well, in the United States, the United States is producing more oil now.
Right.
And so now we're susceptible to hurricane, name the name, goes off to near Port Fourchon in Louisiana and takes off those two derricks. And, it's still not as big of a thing.
No. And that's pretty amazing how the market can be skittish at one thing, like they read a bad headline and go nuts, or you have a major weather event at Port Fourchon where 90% of the nation's Gulf oil work goes through, and it'll be like, it'll be okay. And in a couple of days, everything's fine. It's just kind of bonkers that way.
There's the economics, too, of ethanol. At $60 a barrel, the economics of ethanol look better than they did when oil was trading at $30 a barrel. Now, the anomaly of trading over $100 several years ago, that made ethanol look really attractive. But right now, I was just looking, and I admit to that, I was looking on my peripheral brain. Oil's trading in the $60 a barrel range. So we're in that range where ethanol can be a profitable activity if you can make the sales. But as long as the block is there to putting more into the system, and now that we can do E15 legally and it's being marketed in a different way, it'll be interesting to see if price yields over efficiency, number of miles per gallon that you get when you put it in your tank. So we'll see where that goes.
So what happens if we just rip out and no longer make it a federal law, the renewable fuel standard, and let the market be the market? If it's going to happen, I think it happens with the re-election of Donald Trump. If he's re-elected, that's the only scenario I see. Otherwise, it just continues to be press release on press release. If you want to rip things up, that's the only scenario I'd see. But otherwise, Peter, am I misreading it? You think the RFS goes away?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Okay, so I helped coach one of my son's basketball teams. And so I'm sitting on the bench, and every time somebody gets subbed out, it's, I would have made that shot, but I got fouled. And I just keep saying, if the ref doesn't call it, it's not a foul. And in this case, it seems like the ref isn't necessarily calling fouls in this debate. So if the ref goes completely to the sideline, then I would put my nickel on ethanol volumes going way down, because the blenders will use what they need to meet expectations and pollution emissions requirements.
Standards, yeah.
Right. And that's about it.
I don't even know if they even do that.
Right. Yeah. If the official isn't going to be blowing the whistle on that either. That's another rule they might just start ignoring.
Yeah, I agree with Peter 100%. I think you're right. I think if the RFS isn't there, I think you're going to see a dramatic downturn in production.
Okay. So you raise an interesting question. Does that mean this becomes a bumper sticker issue for whoever the Democratic candidate is? I will enforce the RFS in Midwestern states?
And do you get the farmer vote that way?
Well, here's another question within that. You remove the RFS, and we're talking about a theoretical thing here. You remove the RFS, then all of a sudden, do RINs play any role in this? I mean, you can still make money trading RINs around, but, there's no requirement.
They're basically pointless now. I mean, they've been driven down so low that has been seen as there was no foul called. Therefore, it's not an issue. To take it politically, Democrats in 2016, one of the reasons that the conventional wisdom on why they lost is that Hillary Clinton didn't pay attention to rural issues. Democrats didn't pay attention to rural issues. boy, that's a heck of a one for them to dip into. I will enforce the RFS. And how many politicians have we seen in Iowa alone? I support the RFS. If a Democrat can take that back from a Republican, then you might have something there.
And that opens up, that gets into the whole. Amongst Democrats, there's a big debate because many of them look at ethanol sideways. It's a really inefficient way to power vehicles economically. There's much more efficient ways to do it. Why don't we go in that direction? And so you would have arguments within campaigns about which way do we go with this.
And what if you then start, we go back to the whole, what's your energy best for your area? If you're in Nevada, Iowa, where there is a ethanol plant, then there's going to be two gas stations with ethanol.
Right.
But it's not going to make it to Ames. And it's not going to make it to Marshalltown. And it's going to end up being local. Because in Marshalltown, we got a coal-burning fire, plant. Or we got whatever plant there. And we could all of a sudden move this needle on energy debate. And that might be something that a Democratic administration does more. Because we see what they did for 8 years under Obama and went way to the left and listening to the environmental wing of the party, and a whole bunch of that stuff's been repeals and pulled back.
But the Obama EPA,
the US,
but the Obama EPA didn't grant waivers.
Correct.
At the rate. I've seen like 7 to 10 in an 8 year run.
Not 7 to 10 in a month.
Right. Right. On a Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah. It was up like 300%. In the Trump administration, I think it's the math that we had done.
Yeah,
when I reported on that,
the number of waivers.
Because I think it was eight in 8 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So 2020 is going to be an election year, which I'm alluding to. In closing, I'll ask the three of you. I'm going to stall long enough to think. What is the biggest story impacting agriculture in 2020?
Good question.
Well, I think it's going to be what happens with the Chinese trade negotiations, because I don't think we're by any means done here. And just saying, okay, don't throw that last set of $160 billion on top of us. Don't do that. We'll agree to get something going here so we can move forward. But the numbers of almost double what we did in the years when we were actually trading agriculturally with the Chinese are pretty high. And how they're going to do that and what constitutes an agricultural product is that they're importing tractors and they're not importing corn. I mean, what we don't even know precisely what that is. Is it finished products made with agricultural goods? And you're going to be importing processed foods then? I mean, there's no real definite information. You can't go through and say, here are the 130 products that we're going to be importing, and this is their makeup, and that's how this all works. So I think that's still going to be one of the big things.
The House in Vegas selects China as the big issue. Do you go against the House or with the House?
I'll go with the House. And that, what you were just talking about, Boss Man, brings up a good point. If we get this trade deal settled and everybody's happy, what amount of trade with Brazil and other countries do they stick with? And those are the things that are just going to burn us in this deal. You know, we say, hey, okay, we're back. We can trade with you. Well, when we were fighting, we went to Brazil and we really like what we're doing with them. So we're going to stick with them. How much of that kind of market loss is there going to be as we try and recover out of this trade war? And so I really think I'm with you in this. I think it's going to be trade.
All right.
Trade war.
So as the House, I have to make it more interesting. Are you going to take the field? Is there something else that's the impact, Peter?
Oh, boy. Well, I think given how yields were this year in such a wacky weather year, they seem to have held fairly steady, some drop. So I think it's even more evidence that the weather has less of an impact in do we get a crop? It's how far off the average are we? And for the guy on the ground, the question isn't, am I going to get a crop? It's just, am I going to be able to get it in? Am I going to be able to get it out? What will weather do to that? So it's going to have to be, I'm going to have to go with China trade, things outside of the control of a guy on the ground.
All right. Well, and as it develops, you'll hear about it here. on Market to Market, which is a production of Iowa PBS. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, email us, markettomarket@iowapbs. You can find David Miller on Twitter at
TV Producer Miller.
Without
an E.
Without an E.
Prod C-R.
Or John Torpy on Twitter at
TV Torpy.
And Peter Tubbs is on Twitter.
Peter Tubbs, all one word.
And I'm at Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for listening. Have a good week.